And it is a life or death issue. I know that sounds like a lot of hyperbole, but, you know, there are folks who will die. You know, a lot of Medicaid recipients, a lot of people with disabilities, debilitating mental illnesses.
Fairbanks residents speak out on national health care policy. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, July 7th. Good evening. I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, learning the ins and outs of marine biology.
Remember that when we did the sea otter necropsies, there was like poop and stuff inside of it? That's what this is.
Can we touch it, poop?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Job Corps Center offers training to young people 16 to 24 years old interested in completing their education or starting a career and who meet income eligibility. On-the-job experience is provided in all the training programs, from accounting services to security and protective services. Tweet hashtag CareersBeginHere to learn more. This message is sponsored by Alaska Job Corps Center, Chugach Education Services, Inc.
After 5 months of back and forth, the legislature may be close to compromising on changes to the state's oil and gas tax credit system. Lawmakers in the House and Senate seem to agree that the state needs to overhaul a system that it has paying cash for tax credits to oil companies. It'll owe nearly $700 million by the end of the year. But a bill to change that system, House Bill 111, has been tinkered with by both chambers and neither has budged. The House version of the bill was designed to cut oil tax credits and force companies to pay a minimum tax. Critics called that a significant tax increase. The Senate version of the bill scaled it back, refusing to substantively hike taxes on the oil industry. And so far, the two bodies have been at an impasse. Since June 22nd, the bill has been the only thing on the agenda for the current special session. But most lawmakers left town, and there have been no public meetings on the legislation for the last 2 weeks. Anchorage Democratic Representative Garantar says the House is proposing a compromise to the Senate.
We're proposing to eliminate the cash credits. That is what the governor, the Senate, and the House all agree on. What we don't all agree on is what comes after that, what new incentive or deduction program would be in place.
In exchange for dropping a comprehensive reform this year, Tarr says the House wants a special committee to meet throughout the summer and fall and come back for the next legislative session with a compromise bill. It's not clear what the Senate will do with that proposal. Lawmakers will have to come back to Juneau to hold a session on the bill, and that's not likely to happen right away. Rena Miller, the Senate's communication director, says they probably won't be back until Wednesday at the earliest. And that is 3 days before the special session is scheduled to end. Alaskans concerned about the effects of a U.S. Senate health care bill have been contacting Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan and staging events at their local offices. KUAC's Dan Bross attended a rally outside Senator Murkowski's Fairbanks office Thursday evening.
The event was organized by Our Revolution Fairbanks, one of numerous local groups formed across the country after Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign. The group's Olivia Garrett helped put together the rally to call on Senator Murkowski to vote against the Republican-crafted Better Care Reconciliation Act.
About 67,000 Alaskans, I believe, stand to lose coverage if the BCRA passes. And it is a life or death issue. I know that sounds like a lot of hyperbole, but, you know, there are folks who will die. You know, a lot of Medicaid recipients, a lot of people with disabilities, debilitating mental illnesses.
Among those in attendance, longtime Fairbanks residents Terry Boren and Jim Rupert were clear about what they want included in national health care.
The Medicaid expansion and supporting Planned Parenthood for the state of Alaska.
We need to have consistent coverage for everybody.
Among other rally participants was Santa Claus.
I'm particularly concerned about children.
The North Pole City Council member, whose legal name is Santa Claus, looks the part with a big white beard and jolly disposition, but he's serious when it comes to health care, saying he believes in a single-payer system.
A lot of children are on Medicare and Medicaid, particularly here in Alaska, so I would like to see the Medicare for all.
Earlier on Thursday, a sit-in was held at Alaska Senator Dan Sullivan's Fairbanks office, where a group, including many with disabilities, also expressed concerns about effects of the Senate Republican health care bill. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
There is another event similar to that one scheduled in Anchorage tomorrow, and we'll be discussing the details of the Senate's bill during Talk of Alaska next Tuesday at 10 a.m. For more information, you can go to our website, alaskapublic.org. Experts with the State Department of Fish and Game say the black bear that attacked two workers last month near the Pogo mine was hungry and showing predator-like behavior.
It was a healthy adult male bear that hadn't eaten in some time. It was not defending a kill, and the nature of the attack appears to have been predatory.
Doreen McNeil with the department's Fairbanks office says it's rare for bears to exhibit that kind of behavior. She says the attack on two Pogo mine contractors who were conducting field work at a remote site about 5 miles from the main camp on June 19th is only the fourth report of such behavior among the 208 bear attacks reported between 1980 and 2014.
It's not very common for predatory attacks to happen, but they do happen.
One of the workers, 27-year-old Aaron Johnson of Anchorage, died of injuries she sustained in that attack. The other, 39-year-old Ellen Trainer of Fairbanks, was treated and released from Fairbanks Memorial Hospital on the evening of the 19th. The bear was shot dead by an employee of the mine located about 38 miles northeast of Delta Junction. The attack was the second in as many days. On June 18th, a 16-year-old competing in a race on an Anchorage area trail was killed by a black bear as the runner made his way back after the race had ended. And it looks like there will be a commercial fishery for silver salmon on the Kuskokwim coast this year. A buyer is coming to the Kuskokwim Bay next month with his floating processing vessel, Akiatan. It'll anchor in Eek, or Quinnahock. It's 180 feet long and can process up to 100,000 pounds of salmon a day. Its owner, Larry Lang, is looking for locals to buy cohos from. KYUK's Teresa Katsourilis reports.
Larry Lang and the Akiatan have fished everywhere. They spent years in Southeast processing pinks and money fish.
King, sockeye, coho, and it's all ocean run, so they're all bright and they're very beautiful.
They're currently in Bristol Bay processing sockeye with some fishermen out of Homer.
You chums, but nobody counts those.
Together with his wife and son, Ling is the owner of the Kalawak Oceanside Company, a family-run processing plant. He's never worked on the Kuskokwim Bay, but when he looks at the area, he sees opportunity.
We know we'd have everybody's attention. The coho price, I think, is going to be good this year.
The Akutane's arrival may come as a relief to some YK Delta communities. When the Coastal Villages Region Fund's platinum plant abruptly closed last year, fishermen in the villages were left without a buyer. Lang doesn't know what he'll pay fishermen for silver salmon. He says it depends on the market. But he does know he'll pay by the pound.
We intend to pay cash.
Originally, Lang planned to fish the Kuskokwim in partnership with Pacific Harvest Seafood, a company that planned to distribute silvers fresh to buyers across the country. Alaska's Department of Fish and Game confirmed that the company dropped out and that Kalawak Oceanside is the only registered buyer for the season. Lang plans to anchor the Akutan in Eek or Quinnahock. He's already hired locals in Quinnahock to scout locations. The tender will shuttle back and forth between those two communities. Fishermen from villages upriver will have to travel to them. But if they can get there, Lang and his crew will be more than happy to take silvers off their hands.
Those guys up above wanted to bring fish to us. Heck, we'll take them. There's no problem at all.
Lang could also be hiring locally for several positions on the company's tender, though he's bringing his own processing crew for the Akutan. I'm Teresa Katsourilis.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the art of photographing combat medics.
They are strangely at ease in situations that would make an ordinary person just freak out.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
Last year, Municipal Light and Power completed a $300 million overhaul of their power plant in East Anchorage. The expansion aims to increase efficiency, reliability, and environmental quality by replacing old technology. but it also increases electric rates. Alaska Public Media's Henry Leisha took a tour of the facility to see the new improvements and learn what they could mean for MLNP ratepayers.
Plant Superintendent Nat Lewis reminds the group to keep hard hats, safety glasses, and earplugs on as he leads the tour through a maze of metal tanks and pipes. He stops in front of Plant 2A's new steam turbine as he speaks through his megaphone.
So, this is the Siemens SST-400 unit. It can make about 29 megawatts of power.
The new unit relies on exhaust from the plant's gas turbines. It's heat that's otherwise wasted. This innovation is one of several improvements that boost efficiency while reducing emissions and gas usage. MLNP estimates that the efficiency improvements will reduce fuel costs by more than $8 million annually. General Manager Mark Johnston says that they are still figuring out just how efficient the plant could be.
We have technology here that allows us to kind of push the limits of what the equipment is actually able to produce. And in the last few months, that's what we've been doing, is figuring out how we can run it better.
Johnston says they weren't just looking at efficiency, but long-term reliability as well.
At some point, we knew that if we continue to utilize that technology, customers might flip the switch on and the lights wouldn't go on in their house because we wouldn't be able to provide the electricity.
But the improvements come at a cost for MLNP's customers. Last December, the company filed a case with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska to increase their rates to offset the cost of the new plant. The RCA approved an interim rate increase that will raise the average customer's monthly bill by 19%.
We recognize that it is an increase and a significant one, and it can be a hardship to some of the customers, but we believe that the investment was necessary in order to ensure power into the future.
MLNP wants to gradually increase rates over time to lessen the shock to consumers, but the RCA will make the final decision about rates in November. Johnston says that over time, consumers will spend less money on power than they would have if MLNP continued using equipment past its designed lifespan. In Anchorage, I'm Henry Leisha.
Walruses in southwest Alaska made headlines last year when they hauled out in a new spot. Cape Grieg is located between Ugashik and Ikagik. This year, thousands of them showed up again in April and are expected to stay until November. For pilots and lodges on Bristol Bay's east side, that's made walrus viewing a little bit more accessible. KDLG's Avery Lill has more on how tourism in the area is both trying to utilize and protect this opportunity.
It's no new thing. Some tourists pay big bucks to see bears and walrus when they come to southwest Alaska. For years, lodges and air taxis have flown visitors to Round and Hagemeister Islands and Capes Pierce, Newenham, and Seniavin to witness thousands of walrus resting on beaches. Last year, though, walruses migrating through Bristol Bay did something unusual.
For the first time in recorded history and memory, they've set up at Cape Grieg.
That's Dan Michael. He runs the Crystal Creek Lodge in King Salmon. He used to fly his guests to Cape Seniavin to get a look at walruses, but for the past 2 years, he's taken them to Cape Grieg instead because it's closer to town. Even as he's excited that walrus viewing is more accessible, he urges caution.
They're extremely sensitive to aircraft noise. Airplanes have fallen overhead a little too close, and they all raise up an alarm and start stampeding towards the water. We don't want to do that. We want to have their experience there be as peaceful as possible so that they will continue to return to Cape Grieg.
That's a sentiment that Trig Air pilot and founder Chris Klosterman echoes. He says interest in walrus viewing is increasing as more people hear about trips like the one he offers. In addition to wildlife viewing excursions out of King Salmon, he even offers a day trip from Anchorage. This month, at least six groups will go on that trip, each person paying $1,200 to $1,500 to see these Cape Grieg walruses.
We land right on the beach, about a half mile away from them, and walk down the beach, and there's a big cut bank. Get up on top of it, look down on them, and the weather's nice. It's pretty fantastic, sitting there staring at the ocean and looking at those weird creatures crawling in and out, ivory sticking up in the air, and a lot of grunting and walrus smells.
But Klosterman is conflicted.
It's one of those catch-22s, you know, where you want to be able to take people down there to show it to them, but you want to try and preserve it to keep it this special thing.
Last June, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service developed guidelines for people viewing or traveling near the Cape Grieg haulout. They advise that pilots of single-engine aircrafts avoid flying within half a mile of hauled-out walruses. Boats under 50 feet in length should stay half a nautical mile away, Bigger aircrafts and marine vessels should give the walruses even more room. Walruses are protected by the Marine Mammal Protection Act, which prohibits harassing, hunting, capturing, or killing a marine mammal. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Alaska Native communities in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta are getting federal dollars to help improve energy efficiency. KYUK's Christine Trudeau reports the effort's also a way for villages to start reducing energy costs.
At the end of May, the Federal Office of Indian Energy Policy and Programs announced that 4 Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta villages were among the 19 American Indian tribes and Alaska Native villages receiving initial energy planning grants. Akichak, Atmathluk, Quigilingok, and Aniak will receive around $130,000 each, with a cost share amount of around $15,000, although negotiations have yet to be finalized. Each village plans to, quote, establish baseline energy use in tribal community buildings to help to set energy efficiency improvement goals, as well as provide a benchmark for evaluating future efforts to reduce and stabilize energy costs.
It's exciting. I mean, you know, these projects, they'll impact people every day. You know, it's rewarding, and I think the benefits, especially to some of the rural communities in Alaska, are huge.
Lazana Pierce is with the Department of Energy, Office of Indian Energy, and has been working with tribes in energy for the past 18 years. Pierce says they've asked villages for supplemental data before finalizing negotiations.
We have environmental questionnaires that need to be completed. We do need to negotiate the scopes and the budget of that. It's not necessarily hiring and technical and engineers and all that. It's just additional information that was not included in the original application.
The plan is to finish agreements by September 30th, the end of the federal department's fiscal year, says Pierce. And at that point, the villages can proceed with their projects. As a possible next step, she points to what the Alaska Village Electric Cooperative and the Bethel Native Corporation have teamed up to do: apply for and receive a federal Indian Energy Policy grant for the energy-efficient hardware.
That particular project is the installation of a 900-kilowatt wind turbine.
That, Pierce says, will serve Bethel, Oscarville, and Napakiak.
And based on their proposal, you know, it will serve 6,600 rural Alaskans.
At an estimated savings of over $1 million a year. For KYUK News, I'm Christine Trudeau.
An art exhibit opening tonight at an Anchorage art gallery takes a look at a world most of us hope to avoid, the world of combat medics. The photographs feature Alaska National Guard members jumping out of aircraft, training exercises for recovering casualties in combat zones, as well as for search and rescue missions stateside. Ahead of its opening, photographer Joe Yelverton is putting the finishing touches on the show, which is titled simply Unseen. On the white gallery walls are 33 large format images of soldiers rigging parachutes, trudging along mountaintops, and leaping out of helicopters, looking as calm as if they were ordering lunch.
They are strangely at ease in situations that would make an ordinary person just freak out.
One of the most arresting images in the show draws its power from the grim duality of combat medicine, the violence of warfare alongside the drive to keep people living. Against a white background is a soldier with his back turned, a black assault rifle pressed against a bag marked with a red cross.
This is just a bag of blood on a waist belt.
Even on training missions, the soldiers Yalverton photographs are prepared for morbid injuries and a rapid rescue response. These particular photographs are from the last year, when Yalverton went out on more than 15 training missions with the Guard members across different parts of Alaska. But the project really started more than 3 years ago, when Yalverton made friends with a former pararescueman at an Eagle River potluck. The two started hanging out, and Yalverton began quietly listening to more pararescuers talk to one another about their experiences.
In the process of hearing many of their stories, I became really curious about seeing them working.
The show's title, Unseen, is Yalverton's attempt to highlight the invisibility of work he clearly finds astounding. Many of the images convey his sense of awe, not just with the danger involved in routine training exercises, but also Yalverton's own fascination with the understated attitude of the subjects themselves. The images never feel like advertisements, but they also lack a certain critical distance. Yalverton's project was to shine a light on pararescuers, not in order to expose any sinister secret, but instead to give people a clear sense of the extraordinary work happening beyond public view, particularly when it comes to search and rescues for civilians in Alaska, many of which end up saving lives.
But there's just as many missions that aren't successful, you know, where people die, and the team, you know, still responds to it. They do body recovery. I think that that starts to affect a person, you know, after a while.
The Unseen exhibition is up at the International Gallery in downtown Anchorage through the end of July.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, shark poop. Last week, more than 50 students from the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, or ANSEP, participated in one of the group's newest programs, Marine Science. On Friday, the kids were in Anchorage for their final project. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early was there and has this story.
Students from 22 communities across the state, from Scammon Bay to Soldotna, have spent the week learning about marine science, doing everything from tide pooling in Homer to watching sea otter dissections. One of ANSEP's regional directors, Yosti Storms, says the whole process is to introduce the kids to a career field they may not know much about.
So in marine biology, there's just a whole bunch of different things someone could do. And that's kind of like the whole point of what we're doing this week, is to kind of show the kids like, hey, marine biology is huge, and maybe you don't like dissecting things, but maybe you like working in a lab, and there's that option too.
For those kids who do like dissecting things, they were in for a treat, dissecting sharks. The project began with Dr. Cheryl Wilga, the director of the Biological Sciences Department at UAA, presenting what she called
shark myth busting. So there's a lot of misconceptions about sharks in the oceans today and what people think about them. And so I like to bust them so that and bring them the truth so that they can understand more about these incredible creatures that we have in the ocean.
She explains that sharks have been around longer than people, and some eat with suction and some gulp down several fish at a time. Most of the most famous ones don't even eat their prey whole, opting to take a bite at a time. She's contradicting misconceptions the students may have had about how bloodthirsty sharks actually are. Outside the building, ANSEP workers are prepping for the day's main event.
Were all of them females? Or
yeah, they were all females.
Does one of them not have an egg?
The workers plop spiny dogfish sharks onto various tables, as well as an assortment of other members of the shark family.
So these are all different shark species. You can see the mako shark that she was talking about, and then the thrasher, or thresher. And it's just the head.
Wearing gloves to avoid the creature's sharp spines.
And the baby stingray, which we have floating around in a plastic bag, it definitely has that little sticker coming out of the back of its tail.
With the workstations all set up, the kids come out to find an assortment of sharks on their tables. Flora Andrews is the youth peer mentor at one of the stations.
Yeah, if you guys have your gloves on, you can touch it. Go for it. So the skate has like spines on it.
Ooh.
So if you
what's it feel like?
Skate,
it's like
it feels
just kind of leathery.
Yeah, leathery.
The students are feeling a skate and a bamboo shark. Since a lot of the kids are from areas where they practice subsistence, the smell of a thawing shark doesn't really get to them.
I'm fine with it because it smells like fish.
I love smelling fish. Fish is good smell.
I miss eating fish.
Andrews begins to prep the dogfish for the main dissection.
So, I don't think, hopefully nothing will really spill out too much, but for the most part, right off the bat, you'll see the livers on either side. You'll see your stomach, intestines.
The shark's stomach is a lot like sandpaper, so Andrews has to cut it several times with the scalpel.
So I'm going to have to go through it a couple times more. Oop, there it goes.
Ooh,
a little bit.
Yes. Scrumptious.
All right. Looks so what are you guys looking at right off the bat?
This intestine thing.
Reactions are varied when it's finally opened up. The shark was female and pregnant. Some of the kids are surprised by the eggs inside her.
Remember the egg, female? Okay, hold on.
Well, I'm gonna hold these for a second.
So
tiny.
So.
Oh.
Yep.
Like
so it's a little shark fetus, basically.
As the kids examine the inner workings of their sharks, Dr. Wilga walks around helping out. She says helping students understand the world where many of them live is a big part of what she does with ANSEP. And the kids certainly seem interested.
Remember that when we did the sea otter necropsies, there was like poop and stuff inside of it? That's what this is.
Can we touch it, poop?
In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Aww. You know, trying to see it open.
I wanted to look at the poop.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Merity Littell in Anchorage. Littell is 9 years old and originally from Seattle. She's organizing a children's bike race on July 15th.
It's a fundraiser for Not on Tobacco, an organization that helps teens quit smoking. And instead of racing other kids, kids will bike loops and blow up a balloon at the end of each lap to signify healthy lungs. The big accomplishment is helping our Earth and the people on it by helping them not smoke and quit smoking if they want to. I'd say that I really love being outdoors. That's like my job as being a kid, being outdoors is my job. If it was a weekday, I'd go to camp. It's an outdoor camp, so we play a lot of games, and each week has a different theme for different age groups. You can sign up for different themes, and you go on field trips and learn about that theme. Say it was Earth, Fire, and Ice, I guess. You'd learn about the Earth and glaciers and yeah. I'm at Trailside Discovery Camp, the camp I talked about earlier, and I'm reading to the little kids in the building. And one of the little kids gets a hold of the bear spray, uncaps it, and sprays it in the room accidentally. So we have to evacuate the building and go outside. That was just a small enclosed room, and it's painful. I mean painful. Now I get how the bears feel.
Merity Littell lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
Is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found on our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We have reports tonight from Dan Bross and Tim Ellis in Fairbanks, Christine Trudeau and Teresa Kostarillis in Bethel, Henry Leisha in Anchorage, Rasha McChesney in Juneau, and Avery Lill in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. Ann Hillman produced tonight's show, and I'm Zachariah Hughes. Have a great weekend.
The Alaska Morning News is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Boating accidents happen, even to experienced boaters and on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make those you care about promise to be rescue ready by always wearing a life jacket when in an open boat or on deck, attaching the engine cutoff device when underway, and carrying emergency communication and distress signaling devices on their person. Visit pledgetolive.org for more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.